We begin this week with a question that more than one new parent has lost sleep over. Is my child growing properly? You've probably seen the charts that many pediatricians rely on to measure growth during the first year of a child's life. But Dr. Erin Carroll, a professor of pediatrics, recently completed a study that found that those growth charts might not be the best way to measure a baby's progress.
If you look at the history of how those growth charts were put together, they're what we call cross-sectional. They just take lots of kids at different ages. They see how big they are at those ages, and then they say, okay, well, 95% of kids are this big, and 90% of kids are this big, and 25% are this big, and we set the curves. And when you look at the way the charts are formulated, there are these very nice curves that make it so that people believe that the kids should be growing on this very nice stable curve. If they're at the fifth percentile here, they should be at the fifth percentile up there. And even when kids or babies drop or change percentiles, we start to get worried. In fact, there's a lot of people and a lot of pediatricians that believe if a baby drops two growth percentiles in 6 months, it's what we call failure to thrive. Something is wrong. What we set to do in this study was to actually look at whether babies follow those curves, because the way the charts are put together, it implies that they do, but that's not how they were formulated. And what we found was that tons of children drop at least one or two lines over the course of a year. We found that significant percentages of kids dropped at least one, if not two or more growth percentiles. Only about 35%, I think it was, stayed the same or went up. So the vast majority of children fell. About a third of children dropped two growth percentiles in a six-month period and will be labeled, therefore, failure to thrive. That's a real problem because it implies to parents, it implies to doctors, that we're not giving kids enough to eat. That's not the real problem in America.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, how are parents supposed to read that? Because you know that that's new parents especially. I mean, that's a topic of conversation, what percentile
and
your child is in.
I completely agree, and it's been one of my pet peeves for a long time that I think that there's this over-focus on the curves, on the idea that the kids that are plotted this percentile at this age are supposed to be at this percentile at this age, that there is some kind of projection that we can make based upon where they are now as to where they should be later. We're actually conducting a study right now to see if that is exactly true. But what this study did show was that tons and tons of kids will drop their percentiles over the first year of life. The idea that they do so does not necessarily indicate that something is wrong or that we have to start convincing parents that they have to feed their children more.
Well, and can that be connected to the obesity epidemic?
Well, hesitate to think that this is the cause of the obesity epidemic. Certainly, that has a ton of reasons, many of which are far beyond this. But I have seen personally in clinic, I've spoken to residents who, you know, will come to me with the growth curves and talk about how a child has dropped two curves and they want to start supplementing the feeds. And you look at the child and you know, this child's getting plenty to eat. But because there's this fixation on the curve, people do start to get concerned that when they fall off the curve, as we like to say, that there's a real problem. There's very little evidence that that's the case.
That's Dr. Erin Carroll, who directs the Children's Health Services Research Program at the IU School of Medicine. Dr. Carroll is one of the co-authors of the study on growth charts that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics in July. Still, as children grow up, some of them just don't get as tall as their parents expect. It's called idiopathic short stature. Idiopathic is one of those great medical terms. It means we're not sure what caused it. Dr. Lori Cohen recently wrote a paper offering some advice for parents who are wondering why their children are short. Dr. Cohen is the director of the neuroendocrinology program at Boston Children's Hospital, and she spoke with Sound Medicine's Jill Dittmeyer.
Short stature refers to anybody who is short, and there is a definition for that. So a definition of somebody being short means they are more than two standard deviations below the average for their age and sex. And two standard deviations is about 2.3 percentile, so a little bit less than 3% of the population. When somebody is defined as having idiopathic short stature, it just means we don't know what the cause of their short stature is.
So how do you find out what to determine if somebody does have idiopathic structure then?
So when we have a child who is short, we want to determine what the cause of that short stature may be. So we want to look at their growth pattern. Have they always been short? Have they been taller but just haven't grown well, so they are now short at this point in time? And we can divide that into four basic categories. So there are going to be kids who are normally short just because their family members are short. There are kids who are going to be short because they may have an underlying condition that limits their growth. This can include problems with bones or other syndromes. They may not have grown well because they have an underlying illness, either an illness where they can't use nutrients, they're either not taking enough in their diet or they're not absorbing them as if they have some sort of gastrointestinal disease, or they may have diseases that really limit how much they can grow because their body is working to take care of itself. So somebody who has a congenital heart disease, or I should say a bad congenital heart disease. And finally, there are kids who do have endocrine conditions, so things like low thyroid hormone or lack of growth hormone.
What age should a parent be concerned about their child's height?
So a parent should be concerned about their child's height if they are not on the growth chart. They should be concerned about their height if they are at a certain percentile and then they are starting to fall off. Now, parents should remember that in the first couple of years of life, kids may change percentiles on their growth chart as they get away from that wonderful environment when they're inside mom's uterus and gaining all that nutrition and going towards their own genetic potential. They also may change percentiles during the teenage years because children who are early developers are going to increase their percentiles and children who are late developers are going to decrease their percentiles until they get back to where they should be. But during the ages of maybe 3 to approximately right before puberty, kids tend to stay on their same percentiles within a little bit of a wiggle room around that.
Do you see this more common in boys than girls or girls than boys?
So it is a little bit more common for normal changes in growth pattern in boys. There's just a wider range of variation of normal around the onset of puberty, and so they're going to be more likely to change their percentiles. But in general, in terms of short stature, since it's divine based on sex, you're going to have that same amount whether you're male or female. In general, however, boys come to medical attention about 2 times that of girls, and that may be societal pressures.
So once we've identified that our child might have this idiopathic structure problem, what can we do?
So it depends on what's causing it. So if a child is short and they've been growing poorly because they have an underlying medical condition or they're not eating well, that can easily be corrected. If a child has a known hormonal problem, if they're truly growth hormone deficient, they can receive growth hormone. If they truly lack thyroid hormone or have decreased levels of thyroid hormone, that can be replaced. If they're just going to be short because family is short, that may be who they are. And likewise with syndromes. Now, growth hormone has been approved for some kids who are very, very short, or some kids who have specific syndromes such as Turner syndrome. And in those cases, an endocrinologist may choose to prescribe growth hormone.
And I guess hormone treatment is safe for kids then?
So in the short term, growth hormone has a very good safety profile. We certainly don't know in the very long term when children are now 70, 80 years old, whether that will have made a difference. If you're talking about somebody who's growth hormone deficient and you're replacing what is missing, that's probably different than if you're giving growth hormone to somebody who already makes some. And safety may depend on exactly how much growth hormone you give.
How often are hormones involved in short stature?
Well, that's a very good question that we really don't have an answer to. If you're talking about the incidence of growth hormone deficiency, people had initially estimated it as more like 1 in 10,000 kids or more common. It's been diagnosed much more in the recent era, partially because we don't have the tools to make a good decision as to somebody who has a partial growth hormone deficiency versus somebody who's a normal variant. So it's very difficult to quantify how many children do have a growth hormone problem and how many children would benefit from growth hormone.
We're speaking to Dr. Lori Cohen. She's the director of the neuroendocrinology program at Boston Children's Hospital. And talking about that treatment with growth hormone, I know you wrote in a paper in JAMA about the cost-benefit ratio for it, calling it controversial. Can you explain that?
So it's an expensive treatment. It can cost more than $20,000 a year. And in a child who's just short without an underlying diagnosis of growth hormone deficiency, the average gain in height might be about 2 inches. It can be much more if it's somebody who does have a growth hormone problem that we've had difficulty diagnosing, or it could be absolutely nothing. And it's unclear what the benefits of, say, 2 inches are in terms of a child's life as an adult.
So what should parents do? What should they look for? And at what point do they need to take a little bit closer look at the fact that their child is short?
So a parent should follow along with the pediatrician. So always very important to have regular well child care checks with the pediatrician. And growth is a wonderful, what we would call, vital sign. So a child who isn't growing well, that can be a mark of an underlying health problem. As they're looking along with the pediatrician on that growth chart, if the height seems short for society, if the height seems very short for family, or if the child is really falling off at the percentiles, then that child probably needs some further evaluation. Often that's started with a pediatrician, but she or he may choose then to refer the child to a pediatric endocrinologist for more testing. I think it's important to realize that short stature in itself is not a disease, but it can be a sign of a disease. And also people should remember that growth hormone really is not the treatment for every child out there who is short. And there's really nothing wrong with being short.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cohen. We appreciate your time today.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Cohen is the director of the Neuroendocrinology Program at Boston Children's Hospital. We've posted links to her recent article published in JAMA and to the paper Dr. Erin Carroll was discussing from JAMA Pediatrics. It's all on our website. Just go to soundmedicine.org.